Hello, everyone. Welcome to FAM for All Moms. My name is Shahrzad Kiade, and this is Susan Yara.
Thank you for that very serious introduction.
Across from me is Elizabeth Hunterton, who you've gotten to know through the podcast.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us today, Elizabeth.
We have her as a co-host because she had driven down to record her last couple of episodes. So we decided, why not stick around in the studio with us and record as a co-host?
We're
as
never
well.
Letting her leave, basically, yeah. Is what we're trying to say.
Yeah. So, you know, this episode got a little long, so we're not going to answer the private Facebook group popular questions. Our guest does, but we're going to go ahead and skip right to it because our guest is really interesting. And I loved the conversation that we have with
so good.
Yeah, I loved the conversation we had with her. We are being joined by Dr. Zilana Momeni, and she is a behavioral scientist. I know, what the heck is that, right? But she wrote a book called 21 Days to Resilience, and it's just super interesting to hear her take on how to be resilient, especially in this time and as a mom and everything and as a woman.
Hello, beautiful. You know, I don't know if you remember this, but we met at an event in the Palisades, and I felt like I'd known you because I'd seen you on Pop Sugar and I'd just like seen you on the internet. And I think we were at an event and like maybe our kids, how old are your kids again? I feel like our kids were maybe playing near each other.
They were playing for sure. I've got an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and now a 7-month-old.
Okay. Congrats on your baby.
Thank you. But the little ones were playing together.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember chatting with you and I was so excited that I met you because it was just one of those things where I'd seen you on the internet and then I met you in real life. And I was like, ooh, that's fun. The same way that I found Susan and stalked her until she became my friend. I was like, I've watched you. I know you. Now you're mine. Anyway, so I felt like we knew each other after that. And it made me feel cool.
Wait, so we always ask our guests to answer a couple of really popular questions from our Facebook group. The ones we want to hit you with are, one, do you have one must-have for your hospital bag? I can't even say that.
Yes, and this is very fresh for me, and unequivocally, adult diapers.
Oh, that's so funny. That's our common theme. The next episode of FAM will be brought to you by Depends.
I mean, seriously, forget the mesh underwear, which I used to swear by, but this time around, diapers all the way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Liz, were you a diaper girl too? Or?
No, that wasn't trending when I had my babies. I roughed it with the mesh ones.
You look like an Asian hair.
They move around in those pads. Like you can never get them to stay in the place you need them to. Trust the diapers, honestly, godsend.
Yeah,
that's so funny. Yep.
Did you get the ones that were like sleek? Like you
were your diapers sexy? On?
My girlfriend dropped a whole like huge bags of those at my doorstep like a week before delivery. It was genius. And she's like, these are the ones. And I'm thinking like, is she crazy? And they were like the sleek, fancy, cute ones.
They're not like thick. They're not thick like a diaper.
No, they're not.
Sell it, Susan. Sell it.
Defending her diaper choices. I know. Nobody's
getting all defensive. No one's arguing with her.
Everyone's like, we wore the diapers too.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then the other question was, what are some of your best postpartum healing tips or products? Was there something specific other than the diapers?
Yeah. Other than diapers.
Yeah. I would say lots of broths. So bone broths. The mistake I made with my other two is I didn't get enough fluids after. And I sort of realized that like a year later, I was like, wow, I probably could have, had more milk and like just recovered more easily. And I was like super dehydrated and running around, but I just didn't think about myself. So this time around, I really tried to get in the broths. So it was like a two-pronged effect. It has a lot of nutrients, a lot of healing properties, but also kept me hydrated and kept me going. So I'm a big fan of broths.
And in Korean culture, we actually have like a soup that we eat that's essentially a broth. It's got seaweed in it. Mm. And it's the same kind of concept of like healing after birth.
Nobody gave me any goddamn broth.
Our mesh underwear,
I want my money
no
back.
I made batches in advance. You just make like tons of bone broth and freeze it. And then just like a little bit, every day here and there. The other thing I would say is essential oils really helped me in sort of like the hormonal mood swings. And then also with the actual like physical healing, I found that to be really helpful. too. So different essential oils for different things, especially like calming oils or balancing oils like clary sage for like female hormones, but then also like the lavender and all of those kinds of oils.
Got it. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I saw that she shoots somebody off. I'm recording.
Child.
Okay. So let's get into it. So you have a book called 21 Days to Resilience. And I feel like the word resilience is a word that everybody is trying to kind of implement in their life right now. Tell us a little bit more about your book.
So I wrote 21 Days to Resilience because I realized, you know, years ago that I'm a behavioral scientist and a psychologist. And a lot of my work before this has been in sort of the happiness realm and how happiness, you know, relates to all these positive outcomes. And I quickly realized that our obsession with happiness in our culture is making us really miserable. And so I started to really think about, okay, well, if it's not the happiness piece and we're all so like desperately trying to be happy and we have all these like how to be happy on our to-do list, but we don't actually get to those things. And then we like become really unhappy. So if it's not that, like what creates sustained contentment and success? And of course, everybody defines success very differently. But, you know, I think generally when we think of successful people, we think of people who have, you know, a pretty consistent level of contentment, who are, you know, doing what they want to be doing and who are living the life that they somewhat imagined to be and are who are constantly striving and growing. And so the common theme there when I started to really dig deeper is that they were resilient. They had the capacity and the skill set of resilience. And when I dug deeper, I realized there's really nothing out there that trains us how to become resilient. We all know resilience is really important. We all talk about how great it is, but who's out there teaching us how? No one really. And so that was sort of the genesis of the book. I wanted to help people understand that resilience is not something we're born with or without. It is 100% something that we cultivate, that we have to practice, and it is a skill. And therefore, you know, I wanted to help cultivate that skill. And I wrote the book as sort of like a 21-day boot camp to jumpstart the skill set. Obviously, you're not going to just magically become resilient after 21 days, but you'll certainly be on the right path. And from there, you can sort of practice and keep going with it.
Can you talk about some of the things in there to get your resilience groove on?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I divided the book into three segments, sort of like the self aspects, the spirit, and more of like the social aspects. So each chapter is broken down into these sort of skills that underlie a resilient mindset. So I talk about things like habit and hope and how to cultivate integrity and how spirituality has to do with resilience. And I talk about innovation and purpose and flexibility, altruism, you know, things like that. So within each chapter, I break down, you know, what is it? What is this actual skill? And then you have a morning, day, and night practice, an actual like thing you need to be doing to help you sort of cultivate that particular skill within the resilience umbrella.
Like a gratitude practice or something, like a good habit like that to implement?
Yeah, I mean, within the gratitude chapter, I mean, gratitude definitely has to do with resilience, but I feel like that's yet another thing that people feel obligated to do or be, and it can often feel very heavy, and it's like, oh my God, I didn't wake up grateful today, I'm a horrible person, and then therefore goes this, like, you know, we descend. So I feel like when I write about gratitude and talk about gratitude, it's more of like a simple mindful practice. But yeah, I talk about ways to cultivate gratitude in a way that isn't, you know, just heavy and feels like you have yet another thing you have to do.
Yeah, like a chore.
Yeah, but certainly being grateful has a lot to do with being resilient as well.
Yeah. Well, okay. So who would be the people? I say this like, I think all three of us are like, yeah, I need to read this book right now. But who would be the people that you think would benefit from this book? Obviously, moms benefit from this book because I think we all go down this like rut. We get into a rut, whether we come from privileged lives or we have, you know, not as privileged lives, or whether we have amazing pregnancies and healthy children or children or hard pregnancies and children that were sick or anything like that. I think we all experience something that makes us feel like we're not being resilient enough.
You know, listen, I think being human is just, I mean, we are all dealt with challenges and stressors on the spectrum, some more than others, some at different degrees at different times in their lives. But part of being human is experiencing stress and challenge. That's the idea, is not to get rid of the stress and challenge, but how to weather it in a way that gives you, provides strength and a growing opportunity. Because that's really the difference between people who are resilient versus who are not. It's that they're able to experience post-traumatic growth versus post-traumatic stress. And it really comes down to perception. So like how you actually perceive your stressors, or like the fact that your kid just threw oatmeal all over you and you have to like get to a meeting in 3 minutes. Like, you know, so it's how do we actually perceive that? How do we cope with that? And how do we move forward in a way that's adaptive? And so really it's everyone and anyone who's human. And we have to start really young. We have to start with our little ones too, but they model what they see. And so when we're able to display and talk through our abilities to cope and our ability to problem solve, we're modeling to them what we essentially want them to be doing, right?
That's mm-hmm. interesting. There's a term that's been thrown around a lot lately, not so much during the pandemic, but before, this idea of toxic positivity, like you're obsessively happy and it's this thing on social media. And, you know, social media, of course, exacerbates this idea that like we're always happy and like skinny and pretty and stuff like that. And anyway, I think it's good and so interesting to talk about feeling all the other emotions and recognizing them and learning how to deal with them and knowing that they're okay, so that you're not being mad at yourself if you're not always happy.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been really trying to change the cultural conversation about that for years. And I'm so happy that people are finally like starting to kind of understand that this obsession with always needing to be positive is really hurting us. It's setting ourselves up for failure. It's setting our kids up for failure. I can't tell you how many parenting seminars I run where like every single person in the room is like, well, I just want my kid to be happy. And we've all been there. I'm a mom too. And I've definitely thought that and said that. But in doing so, what are we actually telling them? What's the message? And are we actually setting them up for being able to be an adaptive, like resilient, thriving human being? Or are we just kind of saying like, well, you have to pretend to be perfect and kind of forget who you are and not be human in order to fulfill what I really want for you, which is to kind of just always be happy, which by the way, isn't possible.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that was the expectation for so long, right? You will be happy, be happy, be happy. Mm-hmm. There's a whole song about it. But what is it that you see? What is the biggest barrier or choice, free will, emotion, obligation, guilt, shame? What is it that stands between seeing opportunities as stressors versus growth? Like, what is it that you see, especially in moms, right?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, because we're here to talk with moms. I mean, I think that moms, yes, I think guilt is a huge barrier. I think that, I think guilt as a woman, different than being a mother. So then you're a woman, and then you on top of that, throw in being a mother, and it's like a double whammy. So you've got this like deep-seated guilt, where we live in a culture that throws all these myths at us, like, okay, you got to be balanced. By the way, nobody's ever balanced. It doesn't exist. So let's move on from that as well. But it's like, you got to be balanced. You got to do this. You got to do that. And oh, if you're working, you're abandoning your children. But guess what? If you're home all day, you're also kind of like not really doing anything interesting or important. So, you know, it's just like this constant. And then you're left with this feeling of, am I enough? And usually you're left with thinking you're not. And so I think that getting into this like sort of negative mindset underlies and sort of bars us from being able to be adaptive with our stressors. And again, I think it's really important to understand that resilient mothers, resilient people are not people who don't, you know, who have everything together all the time. The most resilient of us fall apart. But it's within the falling apart that we're able to then say, you know what? I fell apart at the moment, but I'm not falling apart all the time. This is transitory. I'm going to move on from this. And this is how I'm going to deal with it. And this is how I'm going to talk through it with my kids.
This episode of Fam for All Moms is brought to you by OxiClean. We love OxiClean. It's the go-to product for tough stains
on laundry, and honestly, almost any other surface in your home.
OxiClean is not just a stain remover. You guys can use it for all of your cleanups, even if it's like in your bathroom. You can clean bathroom tile and grout, remove carpet stains. You can even clean your outdoor patio furniture if you are having maybe a very small outdoor get together this year.
It renews items that might have been ruined. This can be used on anything from clothing, hard surfaces, carpet, and upholstery. There's over 100 ways to use OxiClean. This is really cool. It's powered by oxygen and it's activated by the air we breathe and the water we drink. OMG.
OxiClean is great and there are so many ways to use it. For more product information, stain solutions, and offers, just visit OxiClean.com. I want to talk about you and your resilience because I've known you for a very long time. We've never been really close, not for any real reason, but I think it's more because we had like, we were almost like coworkers in passing, right? Like back in the day, we worked together at Pop Sugar. We were both on camera. And I remember you always being like, first off, you'd be like, I'm Dr. Zulana. I remember you telling that to one of our bosses, right? And one thing that always stood out to me is that you are beautiful. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. You are a beautiful woman and you happen to be a very smart woman, a very educated woman, and a very ambitious woman. And I think you are kind of like the image of, you know, like you are the woman that a lot of women want to be. And I say this in a very good way. And I want to hear how you've stayed resilient through that, because I think that's a very hard burden, actually. And I know, like, because you know what, like what happens is I think people are like, oh, like she's got it together, poor her, you know, like that kind of thing, or like whatever, go be
she
pretty
must have it easy.
Yeah, like yeah. Go be pretty. And so I brought up the doctor thing because I feel like you were treated that way in a lot of ways, like go be pretty on camera and just do your part, instead of like you'd be presenting these ideas that led up to your book. Like when you wrote your book, I was like, of course she wrote that book. You know, because like you needed to write that book. But I remember seeing, because we were also younger, we're in our 20s, all that stuff. And it'd be like, go be on camera and be pretty. So how did you stay resilient through that? And then how did you like go on to like write your book and do all the things that you've done?
Well, thank you, by the way, for I appreciate your recognition of, and I hate to say that it was a burden, because it's not that, you know, but I do, I get what you're saying. And I think that, I think it's like a multi-pronged thing that sort of led me to kind of persevere through my life. But I think that, you know, part of it is I come from an immigrant background. So I learned very early on that things aren't just, they don't just appear. You have to work hard and you have to, you know, that struggle is a part of life and you get through it ultimately. I think that, you know, once you have, you're like sort of steeped in that mindset, it's like, there's no way around it. So for me, being an educated woman, it wasn't like a question of whether I would be. It's like, how do I get there? How do I become educated? How do I have a voice? How do I learn to speak up for myself in a room full of men? I never thought that I would have the luxury to just kind of sit back and not do something with the life that I was given. And so I think that, I think that through a series of extraordinary people who came into my life at the right times, I think being open to going down a path that I didn't necessarily expect for myself. For example, it was sort of expected that I would go through my doctoral program and become a clinical psychologist and be in a lab and do research and then go on to do, you know, become a professor, for example. That was sort of like the path. And midway through that path, I realized that, you know, I love research. I love doing research, but I want to work with people and I want to be around people. And then I never imagined the media path would come into my way. And then through a random encounter, it kind of just percolated and I was open to it. And knowing that, you know, I wanted to get the message out to a broader audience, and how do I do that? And so, you know, I think being flexible, being open, and knowing that anything less than what I sort of envisioned for myself was not an option. And not to do so by like stepping on anyone. I think it's interesting because I feel like, people feel like, you know, success, you know, you have to just like, you have to do what you need to do at any cost. And that's just not me. And it never was me. And I got hurt along the way. You know, I certainly, you know, I maybe am too open to understanding of people, too like willing to kind of just support each other in a way. But I, you know, I sort of learned through that and that's kind of where I'm at. But, you know, Susan, there's so many things I want to do in my life. And I think I still, you know, and we're all evolving and growing. I'm at a point in my life now with three kids and with the pandemic and just, I'm literally in like, it's like day to day here. I'm not even thinking about like next week. I'm just trying to get through the days where I became a new mom of three and homeschooling two kids all in the same week. I never in a million years anticipated my postpartum, you know, with my last kid to be like this. I had a very different vision. So I had to sort of grieve the idea of what I thought it would be. And so now I'm in, you know, I'm staying grateful. I'm obviously focused on the silver lining, but does that mean that it's not super hard? Absolutely it is. Right. And that's just where I'm at right now.
You know, I think that most of us from our generation, we look at our hardship as what really defined our resiliency, right? Like that's what caused the grit to course through our veins. And I think as moms, we're all hoping that our children don't experience the same hardships. So how do you build in resiliency with your children while you are trying to protect them from the circumstances that built your own?
You know what I'm saying? I was thinking that. You know, like you don't want your brats. You don't want your kids to become brats, right? Yeah. Like
you don't want your brats to become kids.
Yeah.
Either.
Yeah.
But so, I want to touch upon the comment that you made too, just to say that, you know, I think it's important to mention that just because we experience certain traumas or stressors or challenges does not automatically make someone resilient.
100%.
Yeah. So like just because people go through hell, we certainly know the people who are really stuck and really comfortable being a victim or like not actually growing from it and want to stay in that place. And they make a choice to stay in that place.
Or don't make the decision to get out.
Exactly. So yeah, but anyway, so for our kids, you know, I think it's a really interesting parenting dynamic that we are a part of generationally right now. And, you know, unfortunately, what we're seeing and what I'm seeing with a lot of youth now is this sort of like bubble wrap parenting where they are like so not resilient. They are so used to us doing a lot for them and to paving the way for them and to calling the teacher because, you know, so-and-so can't do it or bringing their lunch to school because they forgot it or tying their shoelaces for them because we're late. You know, all of these little things that essentially what we're doing is telling them that we don't believe that they're competent. And what that does over time, even something so minor and minuscule as like just like putting their jacket on for them. But essentially what that does is if you do it often enough, it's telling them like, listen, I don't think you can. And not only does it breed like just them thinking that they can, but it actually breeds low self-confidence and low sense of self-worth. And then they grow up to be like 30 and wonder what the hell just happened and why do I feel so bad about myself?
And who's going to put on my coat?
We had this conversation with another person too about giving kids the opportunity to be independent so that they can develop confidence. And that comes from the little things. Like, I got dressed today, mommy. Like, my youngest is almost four. He'll be four by the time this goes up. He gets so much pride. He's so proud of himself when he can get dressed head to toe. And that to me has been something that's been really important. I don't want to get him dressed. I want him to do it so that he feels good and capable. And I feel like that helps him with his confidence and self-esteem. So I'm glad that a doctor is confirming what I already knew. Well,
and also that you let him put on what he wants.
Yeah.
Because that's not always easy.
Yeah. My kids can wear whatever they want.
Well, and it's taking that one step further. So it's literally like trying our hardest to get really comfortable with their discomfort.
Yeah.
And being able to tolerate them being in pain, them really fighting through whatever they can fight through so that they ultimately know that they can do it, that they can power through these feelings, that they are capable, even when it, especially when it gets hard, that they can persevere through it. And mommy didn't just save me.
Right. Right. Because you have to work on your own relationship with yourself and your own independence.
Well, and in a way, like, this pandemic has essentially created and I hate to say it, but almost like a perfect petri dish for exercising resilience in our children, because it's taking them away from all the activities that we would sort of drop on them just to keep them engaged and active. And it's overwhelming. I mean, it's incredibly developmentally important for children to be bored. And we weren't really giving them an opportunity to be bored.
I say this all the time. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it's like we would, yeah. And so then, so they package that with now all of a sudden, like, their virtual school, and they have to deal with, like, not being around friends. And there's a lot of stuff that they're dealing with. And it's up to us at this point to, you know, sort of guide them and model dealing with this unbelievable change in this unprecedented time, but also not necessarily, like, saving them from it or making it, like, all okay and trying to create all these, like, distractions because, God forbid, they feel uncomfortable with it, right?
This episode of FAM is brought to you by Homeschool Magnet. It's for parents just like you, just like me. We're all overwhelmed about homeschooling our kids, but there's a better way to do it with Homeschool Magnet. Homeschool Magnet supports homeschooling families by providing students with instruction from world-class credentialed teachers in a remote classroom with their peers. Parents choose the best teachers for each student based on values and teaching approach to ensure every child is receiving exactly the education they desire. This puts you, as a parent, in full control of your child's education without the daily responsibilities of lesson planning, pre-learning, teaching, tutoring, and grading, which none of us have the time for when we have other things to do, like, you know, our jobs. To learn more about Homeschool Magnet's student experience, go to homeschoolmagnet.com and join the growing waiting list. So if you're interested in Homeschool Magnet, go to homeschoolmagnet.com and join the growing waiting list. Nikash started to go to school. Like, they've put in all these, like, COVID protocols, all that kind of stuff. And yesterday was the first day since the pandemic started, since March, where I got up early in the morning before the kids to get ready and leave the house for work. So I actually left the house as Nikash was just kind of, like, processing that I was already ready to go, I left. And so I didn't think much of it. You know, like, it kind of was like, if anything, I was really stressed out because I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to be a human, like, an adult, and, like,
pants
get ready.
With a zipper. Yeah, like, it's a whole new thing.
Go be at work today. And I get a call. I was at a client video shoot. I was a producer yesterday. It was kind of crazy. And then I fell and hurt myself. But I went to go be a producer yesterday. And I hadn't done that for a very long time. And then I get a call in the middle of the video shoot from Nikasha's school. And you panic. God. When you see the school calling, you're like, damn it.
Yep.
So I answer right away. I'm like, hello? and she's like, hi, Susan. It's Nikasha's teacher. And I was like, what happened? Like, that's immediately the
Cut
first
to the
thing.
Chase here.
And she says, nothing happened. Nikash is great. But he's really sad today. And I was like, what? Like, I didn't even consider that the teacher might call me to tell me that Nikash is sad. And she's like, I just want to know what happened because this isn't his usual self. He's been in cozy corners, what they call it. It's like a little corner of the room where there's, like blankets and cushions where they can go and sit and read. Yeah. She's like, he's been in cozy corner all morning and he hasn't left and he doesn't want to talk to us about what it is. He just keeps saying that he's sad today.
Aww.
And I was like, I don't know. And first, my first thought was, what did my husband do?
I knew you were going
to
say that.
What did Arun do or say to him that pissed him off, right? And so I was like, well, I don't know. So she starts talking me through, like, what he's told her. And I was like, you know, the only thing that's different today is that I left before I could, like, have breakfast with him. There was no getting him ready. Like, I didn't do any of that stuff today. I left. And I don't really think he processed that I left before he did, because he usually leaves the house. Like, my husband takes him to school. So he usually leaves the house and says bye to me whereas I took off.
Yeah.
And I was just so taken aback by that. And I, you know, it's like interesting to see the dynamic and like how things are going to start shifting as we go back to our new normal life, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah, no, I think things are shifting constantly. And, you know, I think that, in a good way, I think this generation us as parents, we're acutely aware of our children's emotional state, at all times. And I think there's, you know, there's definitely positives to that for sure. But I think that it also comes with it a lot of responsibility and a lot of kind of not so positive things, right? And so I think a lot of us coming back to the guilt feel very responsible for our children's emotional states. And we also feel as responsible to get our kids out of those emotional states toward a more comfortable, like more happy state. And I think, Susan, you know, if you're, and I don't know how it kind of went down in the evening and how you kind of debriefed with that situation, but I do think that the more we're able to hold space for our children's sort of rainbow of experiences and emotion, the better off and the more resilient they will be in the long run. So it's less of like, oh my gosh, you are so sad. I'm so sorry. Like, what can I do to make you happy? Versus like, you were sad today. Tell me about that.
I was like, what happened today? Because he seemed totally fine when I got home. And he was like,
yeah,
he suddenly like, his whole face changed. I was like, what happened? He's like, I was sad. I was like, why were you sad? And he goes, I wanted mommy. And I was like, well, that's okay. I was like, that's okay. Sometimes mommy's going to be gone. And that's okay. And I asked him what we could do. And he goes, I want a pumpkin.
Sounds like Cyrus.
Yeah, like I want a pumpkin.
I need a cookie.
Yeah.
Well, and how amazing was it that he was able to articulate what he wanted?
That's what I was going to say. It's but also crazy. To talk about his emotions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like for him to verbalize his feelings is like a great thing, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Good job.
Yeah. Well, so it was interesting. Definitely some growth within my life
so
and my
child.
So you
are a resilient woman then.
And, and maybe he's going to be resilient too. I hope so, because man, it really is a hard balance.
Do you have tips for, I mean, you know, parenting in a pandemic? I know that this is a really hard thing to ask because we've never parented in a pandemic before, but based on your experience.
Yeah, I think it's really important first and foremost to prioritize our own mental and physical state. I think we're so focused on our family unit and what's happening within the house and outside and this and the pandemic and that we've forgotten sort of ourselves in that process. And whether that means like a 5 minute, like go in your car and turn the music way up and like scream at the top of your lungs to your favorite song, go for it. You know what I mean? Hopefully more than that, but take time for yourself, take yourself out of the equation, to reboot. Because resilience, I mean, I think people have the misconception that to be resilient, you're always having to like hustle and push it and like do it all. And that's actually the absolute opposite of what it takes to actually be resilient. Resilience is very much in the pause. It's in the how effectively and efficiently do you take breaks in order to come back to whatever you're doing with a different improved state of mind and ability to problem solve and whatnot. So I think that's really critical. And I also think that talking through your own experience with your kids, and obviously age appropriate, but even from a very young age, we often have the misconception that they kind of just like know what's happening with us. And they feel everything. So, you know, for example, there's been a huge increase in device usage during the pandemic, you know, especially just with everything, right? And I'm not just talking homeschooling, but like we're always looking. We're looking at news. We're looking at this. We're always on our phones. We know that it takes away attention from our children. We get that there's negative implications there. But, you know, if you're able to talk through what you're actually doing with your kids, even little ones. I realized the other day I was scrolling through my phone. Ethan's talking to me and he called me out. He's like, Mom, you're on your phone. I'm talking to you. And I was like, oh my gosh, I am so sorry. I'm actually looking at a recipe that I'm making for dinner tonight with you. And I just realized there's no way for you to know that. And he's looking at me and he's like, oh, I had no idea you can look at recipes on your phone. So this whole time, this poor kid is thinking that I'm just like doing something totally not to, you know, so I think just talking through our experience, or if you're really struggling with something and you lose your cool, which by the way, totally normal and healthy to do sometimes, repair that. Like, I'm sorry I yelled at you. That's not how I want to communicate. And this is what I'm going to do to move forward. Or mommy needs a timeout because I'm really angry right now. And I'm going to come back when I'm feeling better about talking to you. So just like articulating our experience and our own coping mechanisms more so than we have been in the past can be really beneficial, especially during this time.
I mean, we just talked about the experience that I have gone through with this life transition, and it comes with emotions. And the other day I was in the front seat, just kind of quietly crying to myself.
Been there. And, so been there.
You know, and, yep. And, you know, I exploded and, you know, I pulled the car over and I started yelling. And my son looks, he goes, "Mommy, are you crying?" And I said, "But I'm sorry. Like, mommy's trying to find the mommy who had me from her tummy. And that just comes with a lot of emotions." And Eli, who's six, looked at me and goes, "Mommy, why would you say sorry for crying?"
Aww.
And I was like, "Oh, yeah, you're right." And he was like, "Mommy, sometimes you just have sads that need to come out."
Oh,
sads. Like sads and scareds. We talk because, I mean, I have anxiety. So he knows sometimes I have an anxiety attack. So he knows that sometimes the scareds just get too big and the scareds have to come out. And there's a stuffed animal in my purse that they gave me to help me feel brave so I don't have a panic attack today. But, you know, it's interesting how our generation and our gender often attaches shame or guilt or obligation or whatever to our emotions, whereas I think we have a really inherent responsibility to raise our children without the same stigma. And I think it's working because our children don't expect us to apologize for having emotions.
Yeah.
You know, like we do. We have sads, we have scareds, we have mads that need to come out of our body, and it's okay.
Yeah, totally. I love that.
Yeah. And talking through them like they're human beings, like they can contribute to the conversation, and it's
exactly. Yeah. I think that also respecting our children as the humans that they are, who are individuals from us, who have their own, you know, experience of the world. And it's not going to necessarily always be the same as ours, and to listen more than we talk. You know, we often feel as parents that we have to just tell them what to do all the time. And really it's more about sort of guiding their experience and asking a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Well, and don't you feel like in this pandemic, you've had more time to observe your children? And you're like, I did not even know you knew how to do that.
Yeah.
Like I've been so impressed with my children multiple times just because I've had more time with them all day, every day for 5 months.
I think that our kids honestly are going to remember this time as some of the best years of their lives.
I think so too. I mean, my kids love hanging out at home.
Yeah.
And we're lucky we have a nice house where they can hang out in, and there's like a lot of little designated spaces in our house for them to play. But they're, I don't know. I feel like I've evolved from the beginning of the pandemic to now personally in my own little journey, because you mentioned grieving the things that you thought were going to happen during a certain period of time. And I certainly felt like I started 2020 like, I'm going to make this year my bitch.
Oh, we did. And like, all of us.
You know,
all
and
of us.
We were supposed to like slay 2020. And like all this shit. And it's funny because I did. And Susan and I talked about this so much, just the grieving of what we thought was going to be our life. And then I went through a period of like, okay, I've got to chill out and stop being obsessed with what was supposed to happen and just start adapting to what's going on right now and start really looking for silver linings and gratitude and realizing that they're for us in my little world. And I know there's a lot of people who don't have this experience, but we're doing great now. We like came out of this better, I think, than when we started the pandemic, in my, knock on wood, in my little world, because we were able to focus on things in a different way and be flexible. And I think flexibility is one of the like key words in addition to resilience. Is like, I think a lot of people have always thought that we've had control over our lives. And this pandemic has absolutely reminded all of us that we've never had control over our lives at all. We're not promised or guaranteed anything. And now the whole world has experienced this lack or loss of control. And then it makes you focus on other things today, the present moment, you know, eye contact, conversation around the dinner table.
That you can control.
Things, little things, yeah. Right? You focus on the little things you can control because you realize the big picture stuff is just kind of out of your hands. But yeah, I think flexibility is tough for people that like to be in control. You know
what?
Well, and I think
look at Susan.
What's that supposed to mean?
Wait, control? What? No. I think that you hit the nail on the head with this pandemic. Is it's really just like flipped it all for us and kind of given us an like this experience of learning how to deal with this lack of control, which it, and on like a human collective level is incredible and massive. And I think that's what I got me through. I mean, as hard as it was to have a newborn during all of this, it just literally, like, I had no choice but to focus on the moment. It was like the moment to moment to moment to mm-hmm. just like survive.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was a blessing in that sense. And in so many ways, thank God. But like, you know, just to, that she just forced us to be present and just, you know, do what needs to be done.
Yeah.
Well, and in the way of resiliency, are we going to go back to what we were before the pandemic? Because I do think we found a lot of silver. We have reset in some of the most beautiful ways.
I hope not. I think that there's been so much learning and growth for so many people around the globe, even as through the pain and through the hardship, especially because of it, that if we were to go back, it would really make this all not even worthwhile in a way, right? It's like, what
would it not be the biggest step back?
Oh, yeah, totally.
I do. I think so. So I hope not. I hope that we're able to hold on to these learnings. You know, I do know what I do know about the human experience is that we have a short memory, and you know, we tend to focus on what's right in front of us. And I just hope that in the years to come, when you know things start to normalize again, that we hold on to this and that we're forever changed in a more positive way from this experience.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect way to end it on that note, because we know you're busy, girl. You got a lot of babies and you got stuff to do. So we'll leave you there, but where can people connect with you? How can they find your book, or where should they follow you?
21 Days to Resilience is sold wherever books are sold. So anywhere. And then Instagram, dr.zelana, dr.zelana. And I do every Thursday. I had Susan on recently. Every Thursday I do a live show with thought leaders in various genres called Power Up. And it's been great to talk to people about all sorts of things. So yeah, tune in there. And then obviously my website, dr.zelana.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And Liz, I'm so glad that you got to be a co-host with us today.
Thanks for having me, guys. Excellent work. Excellent. Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll talk to you soon.
Cheerio.
Bye-bye.